You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert, and we're about to take a deep dive into the conditions that are facing children who've been separated from their families on the border. But first, I want to recap the developments of the past 24 hours, because things are moving really fast. So first off, you've probably heard, under immense pressure, President Trump has just signed an executive order. This will not change anything for the roughly 2,300 children who've already been separated from their parents. This has been confirmed by government officials. They're not applying it retroactively. The new order also does not change the administration's new practice of prosecuting everyone it can who crosses the border. What it does do is it directs the government going forward to detain parents together with their children while the parents are waiting to be prosecuted. And there's a really important footnote to put on that, which is that that situation will not necessarily last very long. Unless the Trump administration succeeds in getting a federal court to modify a 21-year-old settlement that limits the length and the conditions of child detention, unless that happens, the Trump administration's decision to hold parents for criminal prosecution means that they're still going to have to send their children away from them within about 3 weeks. Now, for kids without relatives or guardians in the U.S., that means going into the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement and entering a system that has had serious problems dating back to well before Donald Trump took office. Those problems include reports of medical neglect, involuntary psychiatric drugging, even physical and sexual abuse. Our guest is Auda Bulgato. She covers immigration for Reveal at the Center for Investigative Reporting, and she's been working with the Texas Tribune on a major investigation into the places that the kids wind up. Auda, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here with you.
So let's do this from the perspective of one of these kids. You get split off from one of your parents. Where do you get sent next?
Well, that's going to depend. Generally, what's happened in the past is that if an unaccompanied minor, if a minor who doesn't come with a parent, either requests asylum at a port of entry or is caught crossing the border without inspection, they, for up to 72 hours, can be held by Customs and Border Protection. And then after that time, they're transferred to the care of ORR, which is the Office of Refugee Resettlement. At that point, they're placed into a facility. There are more than 100 of these facilities, and most of them are the regular sort of shelters that we've heard a lot about, and some of them step up. That's actually the term that's used. They step up in terms of security and in terms of the medication that the children are given. With children who have arrived with their parents accompanied and then have then been made unaccompanied because they've been taken from their parents by the U.S. government, this is the same process. Now, if one of those children acts out in a way that staff can red flag, so for example, if a child really wants to get back in touch with their parent and tries to run away, if a child does anything that the staff may deem even slightly sexual in nature, according to the staff, they may be then sent for a psychiatric evaluation. And that's where we've seen some of the problems start in terms of the forced medication. But a lot of these regular shelters also have hosted a bunch of problems. Inspection issues, a bunch of things have been reported, corroborated, people have been fired, people have gone to prison. And it's pretty widespread.
I want to get into those problems in a minute, but first just kind of clarify who's doing what. So who's running the shelters that the kids wind up in?
Right. The shelters are all run by for-profit or nonprofit organizations. Some of them are religious in nature. Some of them may have been religious in nature and are no longer. Some are just straight up businesses. It depends on the shelter.
So what are the worst problems that have been documented at the shelters?
There have been reports of sexual assault. There have been reports of staff showing up drunk. There have been reports of staff soliciting child pornography. And what I've really been looking into is the forced medication of children. Normally in the United States, when there is a child and there's a recommendation for them to be treated, the parent, of course, has to consent. That's pretty standard across the board. For immigrant children who are under the custody of what's called a residential treatment center, that's the designation that ORR uses, not only are they evaluated without the consent of the child or the parent, they're also then drugged without the consent of the child or the parent, sometimes very violently so.
Some people do need psychiatric drugs to be healthy and functional. What are the indications that they're abusing the power to do the drugging?
The 10-year-old that I've been spending some time with here in New Orleans, he had some behavioral issues. He really wanted to get out of the shelter that he was at. He expressed it several times, and he tried to run away. He tried to run away because he knew his mom was somewhere in Louisiana, and he wanted to get to her. Because of that and some other behavior, the staff then signaled him, referred him to be psychiatrically evaluated by a psychiatrist in Texas, who then deemed that he should be transferred to one of these centers. There, he was drugged, pretty heavily drugged, and his mom had many opportunities to connect with him via video. And she describes over and over again, you know, she told me he was slow, he changed, he would slur his words, he was hypnotized, he was lethargic, he just wasn't acting like my son. She never used the word zombie, but that's more or less how she described him, especially as time went on. And she was furious. She did not want her son on these drugs. She wanted a say in the care of her child. Her child was 9 years old when he first entered this facility. And she was told over and over again, no, these are doctor's orders. This is what we have to do. The doctor has ordered it. She begged. She begged. I've seen multiple messages in which she begged the caseworker to release her son. She was angry. She begged. She asked in so many different ways. And he wasn't released for 6 months. ORR knew where she was. She has legal presence in the United States because she's pursuing an asylum case. She has a work permit. She has her life here in New Orleans. She can easily provide a home for him. Her home was inspected twice, and she said that the inspections went really well. And meanwhile, they would not release him to her. And then they suddenly did in April, and she's unsure why. I looked over several hundred documents full of medical records and different correspondences and evaluations from different doctors. I even found in there one medical record for another child who is not even her child. Somehow that just winded up in his file. And, you know, for 6 months, she couldn't get her son back.
So that's the story of one kid. How widespread is the drugging, as far as you can tell?
I don't have solid numbers on the druggings, but in my investigation, I've found that we're not talking about one or two kids or even 10 kids. A lot of young immigrants have been drugged with, again, very heavy psychotropic drugs.
I mean, the obvious concern to me is that the drugs could be administered to make things easier for the people managing the kids rather than to make things better for the kids. So can you kind of like walk us through how the financial incentives work? Like, is the shelter making money by keeping that kid there?
This particular residential treatment center is called Shiloh. It's just outside Houston in this little town called Manville. And they've had about $25 million in contracts, federal money, taxpayer money, our money, that they've earned by providing services like housing, education, and medication and medical care to these children. Something that a lot of people might find alarming is that, you know, you hear medical treatment center and, you know, I'm from LA, I think of, they have ads for these very fancy, you know, sprawling homes out in Malibu where people can really recover from addiction or whatever is ailing them, we found that these are mostly trailers. I brought with me several photos of different properties that we had found through property records and otherwise that were connected to Shiloh. And the little boy that I've been spending time with, he pointed out a whole bunch of places. He's like, oh yeah, that's the hospital. Oh yeah, and that's the school. These are all trailers. They're trailers. That's how this is being operated.
Shiloh, as you tell the story, has a fairly troubled past. The kind of constellation of organizations associated with Shiloh and its owner have had three children die while they were under physical restraints. That's before they started contracting with the Office of Refugee Resettlement. What kind of repercussions are there? What kind of scrutiny do these organizations get?
Well, the man who owns Shiloh, as you mentioned, he is connected to these other companies. This other company, Decor, we know that it shut down by name, and that is probably connected to the way that children were killed. I mean, they were ruled homicides at these facilities. We also did find that one child suffocated to death at Shiloh. And so the repercussions, Brian, I don't know what to tell you. There haven't been many. ORR is currently contracted with Shiloh through 2020. It's not like the federal government or local officials don't know about it. I looked at Texas state inspection records. There are all kinds of reports. As recently as December 2017, it was found that staff there was accidentally leaving out these very heavy drugs. Again, we're not talking about something like Tylenol, leaving really heavy drugs in the reach of children, for example, at the facility. ORR knew about it because a local DA was demanding that ORR, you know, closely monitor Shiloh. So again, local, state, and federal officials have known about it. But I can't really say that it was necessarily ever under any kind of scrutiny. Maybe that'll change as a result of our report. I'm not sure. There does seem to be more attention to it now. But people have known, and this center keeps operating. These trailers are still housing children that are being drugged against their will without the consent of their parents. And as of today, that's still happening.
Well, let me flip the question around. What does it take for one of these facilities to get their government contract canceled?
Part of how this gets tricky is each state is responsible for licensing the specific kind of facility. So some facilities, you know, they're not doing the administration of heavy drugs. They're simply doing housing. Others are doing this kind of medication. They're all doing, well, not all of them, but many of them are doing like some form of education. So there are different licenses that are issued by each state. And that's where we found so many of these records. But they could potentially be shut down if the state finds that something was egregious enough, I suppose, to either suspend their license or permanently revoke it. And I'm guessing at the federal level, I suppose a contract could be canceled, I suppose. I don't know all the legal ramifications of that. I have tried to get a hold of Shiloh. I've called and left messages. I've tried to contact ORR. Nobody has gotten back to me.
Wow. Let's kind of go into the bigger picture. How much money is in play here? Like how many of these shelters and treatment facilities is the federal government keeping in business?
So in roughly the last 5 years, these companies have gotten close to, I want to say $3.5 billion with a B, and nearly half of those, or nearly half of that money rather, has gone to companies that we've identified as having, you know, serious allegations and or outright violations. So that's about $1.5 billion over the last 5 years or so to these companies, these organizations in which there have been, you know, really serious allegations.
So then I guess the even bigger picture question is, like, how did it get there? How long has it been operating this way?
You know, for every place it's different. We see a spike with a lot of this in 2014. That, of course, is when people refer to the surge. A lot more Central American children are sort of coming in that time unaccompanied for a variety of reasons. And it's not that it wasn't happening prior to that, but in 2014 is when you see just a really big spike in terms of contracts.
Yeah, I guess that's my question. Like, is this something where bad practices have spread because it was set up hastily in response to a crisis? Or is it something darker and more corrupt than that?
You know, I'll let listeners be the judge of that. What I can say is that, sure, when you set something up hastily, it's not going to turn out that well. Say you're planning when there is a so-called crisis and you have a big influx of people that you were not necessarily expecting, things may not turn out well. 2014 was a long time ago, though, and we're not talking about, you know, a few months or even a year or even 2 years. It's been a while now. These allegations, these kinds of abuses have been happening during that time. And again, the federal government knew, local officials knew, the state knew, people knew. I mean, ultimately, you know, it was very important for me to really try and find a family that would talk to me, because this is rampant. But because of the policies that, you know, have been enacted under this administration, a lot of people are very reluctant to talk, particularly if, you know, we want to use their name, right? I finally did, and I'm happy that I did. But there are a lot more people who don't want to talk for the reasons that you can imagine.
Yeah, I'm sure. Auro Bogado, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us.
Thank you, Brian.
Auro Bogado is a journalist covering immigration for Reveal at the Center for Investigative Reporting. In collaboration with the Texas Tribune, she has been investigating conditions at the facilities where unaccompanied minors and more recently children who have been separated from their parents under orders from the Trump administration are sent.